In 2016, a crime occurred in a US state of New Mexico that horrified the nation and the world. A child was sexually assaulted, then brutally murdered, and her body was mutilated. Initially, her own mother would face murder and rape charges along with two accomplices. However, it wouldn't be until 2 years later that the truth would finally emerge, leading to the hunt for a killer that continues to this day. This is the murder of Victoria Martins.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen.
So let's look at today's case in depth. Victoria Martins, she was born on the 23rd of August, 2006. She was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she lived with her mother. Her mum was 35-year-old Michelle Martins. She also had a younger half-brother, Matthew. He'd been born in 2008. They lived at the Ario Villas Apartments. And I would say that as a mother, Michelle wasn't your picture-perfect portrait of being that kind of person. I'm not saying that she didn't love her children. I'm just saying there was a level of dysfunction pretty much from the get-go in her life. Now, Michelle was estranged from Victoria's biological father. Initially, Matthew's father had actually helped to raise her two children. So she had met her little boy's father and he'd taken on that role, but inevitably that had broken down. So again, we're seeing quite a lot of transition in these children's lives. Michelle was originally from the Bronx, New York, and then she moved to Texas before she settled in Albuquerque. Now, we get to 2016. 9-year-old Victoria Martins was in fourth grade at Petroglyph Elementary School. I have listened to a lot of people talk about this little girl. And when I talk about this case today, that's what we've always got to keep in mind. I'm talking about a little girl. People rave about her. They talk about her sunny disposition, the fact that she was a really engaging child, that everybody liked her. She had a smile that would light up a room. And I think if you see pictures of her, I think most children light up rooms, to be honest, but certainly she displays that archetypal, stereotypical look of a happy kid and one that certainly seems to be well-loved within her community. But that doesn't mean that there weren't difficulties in her life. Without a doubt, there were. The friends that played with her said that she was somebody who was always fun to be around and that she was popular. She enjoyed swimming, she enjoyed gymnastics, and one of the things that she would often do would be display her gymnastic talent on her grandparents' lawn, which really resonates with me because I think anybody who's had kids or had the luxury of being around young children, there is just something really life-enhancing about watching them gain a skill and then just demonstrate that skill. She attended G-Force Gymnastics Academy every Saturday and her mum would stay and watch her practice. And the reason I'm bringing that in is because if any of you have heard about this case, you are going to have heard a lot about her mother and it won't be palatable to you. No matter which way you've come off in your understanding of what's played out, as I said, the perception perspectives, even the pictures that you'll have seen, will have no doubt formed some kind of bias within you. But I want to just bring you to that perspective of the fact that on a Saturday, for a period of time, her mum was very much behind her and went and did those mum things, like being around her when she was engaged in her activities. Victoria was known to be really close to her grandparents, John and Pat Martins, and they would see her virtually every single day. This child was very well loved by her extended family. They'd often pick her up from school, so when the school bus dropped her off, that was when her mum was working. And she was a really fun-loving little girl. She was always full of life and smiling. Her mum, Martins, used to call Victoria her miracle child. And the reason for that, she detailed. So she'd talk about the circumstances in which Victoria arrived in the world. She said, I delivered her by myself at home. I just went into labor with her at my house, and they took me to the hospital afterwards with her. Basically, I wasn't having no doctor visits. I didn't have prenatal care, but she was healthy. So even the way that she arrived in this world was without any great drama. But again, I'm just drawing you to the insight that we're given about Martins as a mother, because clearly we can note that there are some real positives at this point regarding the way that she cared for her child. Now, by all accounts, it seems that Martins had been a really good, loving mother to Victoria. So people who knew her said that she was somebody who had cared for that child and for her children. And, you know, Victoria developmentally was doing very well. And that's, again, an important insight, because we're seeing that this is a child who is fundamentally reaching the goals and milestones that are expected for a child of that age. That doesn't mean that children who come from highly dysfunctional, abusive situations do not always meet their milestones. They do. There are geniuses who still get abused at home. It just makes it more difficult. So if you're an average child or even a bright child and you have problems at home, it impacts. You know, at the end of the day, anything that impacts on our foundations and affects our levels of mood because of what we're enduring, that's going to have an impact also on our learning. But that wasn't notable at school. She was seen as somebody who was doing well. And Martins had actually worked hard. So she wasn't somebody who was afraid of grafting. She'd recently started a new job at a local grocery store. Also, for a long period of time, she regularly went to church. She had no criminal record, and she didn't drink, and she didn't take drugs. This is highlighted by the fact that she actually had to pass a drugs test to secure her new job. Now, I'm bringing that in, not because what I'm going to talk about licenses any excuse by this prior behavior for what occurs in the future. Of course not. We are responsible and accountable for our choices. Undoubtedly, we need to stand in that truth. And when we make awful choices, we are absolutely without doubt responsible for doing so. But when I came across this case, I can tell you, in the first couple of news reports that I watched, I felt a loathing so deep for this woman. It was shocking to me, to the point where I have followed this case from the get-go. It totally blindsided me. It was as far away from what I experience as a maternal instinct and the way that that instinct plays out in the way that I treat my children as it could possibly be. So it stuck with me. I certainly didn't imagine that when I looked into the background of this woman that I would be telling the story of the fact she was a church-going, non-drinking, non-drug-taking, hard-working, apparently loving mother. That's important. Like I said, doesn't excuse what we're going to talk about down the line, but evidence is the fact that she wasn't this terrible human being all the way through her life. Certainly not. The problem that we have is that after she started this new job, and as she's going through the motions of being at this point a decent parent, life choices would ultimately lead her down a tragic and very different path that would have beyond reprehensible and horrific repercussions for Victoria. One thing that Martins appears to have had poor taste in is men. In March 2016, Martins calls the Child Protective Services and she reports that her boyfriend, David Hernandez, had tried to kiss 9-year-old Victoria. Now, it would later transpire that Hernandez actually had a history of sexually abusing children. So this is a predator that's in her life, no doubt grooming her to get to her children. That's what they do. They're not in love with you. They're not interested in you. They're interested in getting their hands on your kids. And they may act like Prince Charmings, but the whole premise of that is to take you off guard, believe that they are the best person possible so that they get access. to carry out their depraved acts with your babies. So Hernandez had a history of sexually abusing children. He'd even been arrested for attempted kidnapping of a four-year-old girl. That was in 2013. He should not be on the streets at the time. How is this man who was attempting to kidnap a four-year-old girl who has a history of being a child predator, how is he not in prison? Can we just ask that question? Can it be any more sinister that an individual like this could possibly be allowed on our streets? Now, apparently it's because he was never charged for the sexual assaults, and the charges were ultimately dropped for the attempted kidnapping. Personally, I believe that'll come down to shoddy investigations. Oh, there isn't enough evidence to prove. Oh, a court won't find them guilty. Well, all I'm going to say is I've covered quite a lot of cases where the police just fit evidence or create circumstances, take it to court, and the person goes down for life. Just throwing it out there, why not do it with somebody like this when clearly there is a consistent theme? This guy is a predator. Evidence to gain when Martins finds him trying to be inappropriate with her little girl. Now, again, at this point, it really does feel like Martins had her best interest of a child at heart, because she calls Child Protective Services. She tells them about this man. She ends the relationship with Hernandez and she throws him out of the apartment. You cannot say anything apart from the fact that the woman that we are seeing, the mother that we are seeing at this moment in time, is making the right choices. You know, you cannot sometimes help that you meet a predator. They are very good at making you believe that they are good human beings. And if she didn't have the background understanding of who this human being was, because there weren't charges that were actually made and that stuck, then understandably, when she entered that relationship, she wouldn't have been aware. And again, this is why it's so wrong when these offenders constantly become these perpetrators of crimes that never actually reach the court system, because it means that they are licensed to continue. There are no consequences. Why would they stop? Also, in spite of the fact that she says, look, I saw him trying to kiss my little girl, he didn't actually face any charges for trying to kiss her, which is bizarre. There was literally a witness and a victim who could evidence the fact that it had happened. But who am I to imagine for one minute that we would want to get child predators off the streets? Particularly child predators who tried to abduct four-year-old girls. So Martins then goes on to contact Child Protective Services 5 times in 2016. But during this period, it doesn't appear that there was an investigation into Victoria's welfare. So it didn't appear that, in spite of the fact that she was contacting them, they took that much of an interest in looking at how Victoria was and how she was faring, particularly in reference to what had occurred. Then we get to July 2016. As I've said, Martin's folly is that she certainly isn't somebody who is adept at understanding the right kind of people that she should introduce into her own life, let alone the lives of her kids. So Martins begins a relationship with 31-year-old Fabian Gonzalez. They meet on the website Plenty of Fish. Just gonna throw it out there. In my experience, and I have done research around dating sites. I've worked with some very big dating sites. And I can tell you that Plenty of Fish is not really the place you wanna go for a long-term relationship, you know what I mean? It's quite good for hookups. I'm sure it's good for those occasional dalliances. And I imagine that, I don't know, one person out of every million has met somebody that they get in a relationship with, but for the most part, it ain't that good. But nonetheless, that's where they meet. And Martins claimed that when she first met this guy, she thought he was a good guy. Well, of course she did. You don't get into a relationship thinking, this guy is a terrible human being. I should definitely not get involved with this guy. Do you want to move in? That's not how it works, is it? But what she says is, when she met him, she was completely unaware that he drank alcohol or that he did drugs. And so that's in keeping with her mindset around how to live a reasonable life. And historically, that's how she's lived. She's also going to clearly be looking at the best of him at that moment in time. When we're lonely and want a relationship, we're often very forgiving of certain traits. And even when some of the less positive actions or interests of that individual creep in, often by then we like them, so we're more forgiving. That's one of the reasons why on dating websites, there are specific questions, at least on the good ones, which are all about lifestyle choices. So hopefully you can weed them out. I know predators are just gonna fill them in as they think people want to see, but you know what I'm saying? The reason behind that is because actually life values are really powerful and important when it comes down to meeting partners. I will say from the get-go, Gonzalez was not the kind of character that you would want around your kids. So I appreciate everyone deserves a second chance in life. I really do. There are lots of examples of human beings who've grown up in circumstances that have been less than perfect, have gone on to carry out actions that require judgment, and then have turned their lives around and done amazing things with their world. But the problem here is that Martin's got two children, and you have to think about the impact of the person that you're bringing into their world. So the fact that he was an unemployed gang member with a long criminal record, and it wasn't a criminal record that was involving things like, I stole a sandwich from Tesco. I pulled a Mooney when I was 13. I drove my friend's car and I wasn't insured on it. They're not good at the end of the day. They're all evidencing things that we probably shouldn't do. But arguably, we're not going to be thinking, well, this is going to dictate the rest of that person's life and future. That's not what Gonzalez's past criminal history represents. Assault of a former girlfriend. He had a child abuse charge. But also, on top of that, he was a methamphetamine user. By anybody who has seen before and after methamphetamine user pictures, let's be honest, it doesn't take an expert in pharmacology to understand that the faces alone demonstrate why it's bad. Literally, the psychological and physical toll it takes on the body is extreme. It's one of the most dangerous drugs on the market. It's as simple as that. And I genuinely believe that when somebody is on this kind of substance, you can't have them around any children whatsoever at any point, because they are certainly not compass menders. Their priorities are completely at odds with being a parent. And of course, they're not exactly going to be on the ball, are they? When it comes to babysitting, you know, when it comes to being a parent in loco, you know, at the end of the day, it's your job as an adult parent or an adult child caretaker to be completely with it. It's why I didn't drink any alcohol for at least 12 years after I had my kids, because I wanted to make sure that if something went on in the night, I was going to be able to drive them to the hospital. Yes, I was that paranoid. I'm very resilient with my kids, but yes, I was that paranoid about what if they needed me and I was drunk and couldn't do it. So Gonzalez is not great. Big problems drug-wise. Pretty bad criminal history, gang affiliation. So Martin thinks, what I should do is I'll just move him in. Just move him in. Just a week after meeting this guy on the, of course, iconic platform, Plenty of Fish, where obviously all the checks are carried out to ensure that you're not meeting a wrong'un. She's like, this is what I need for my future. She moves him into the apartment. So suddenly we have a known criminal, drug user and gang member living with 9-year-old Victoria and her younger brother. They don't know him. There's no relationship with this man. She doesn't know him. She has no understanding about the potential fallout that could occur because of this human being. She has no understanding of the danger
that could befall her children by introducing this kind of personality into her world. And let's just go for Gonzalez being the best picture possible, looking at his prior. He's reformed, he's got out of prison, he's recognized his sins, he's realized he needs a change, and he wants to be with her for all the right reasons. Let's just put it in that category. By introducing him with that prior history into her home, there is a potential that other people from his past may not be happy with him and who he is and whether he's reforming or otherwise. And the consequence of that could introduce danger to those children's lives. So no matter what happens, even in the best case scenario with this human being, even if his intentions were good, this is a very bad situation for the children and it should never have taken place. On top of this, Gonzalez, as we know, is a drug-addicted gang associate. And that means that he's surrounded by other gang members who are frequently at the property. So now he's introducing this whole heap of inappropriate into these children's lives. And can you imagine being a kid whose mother, essentially until that point, has been pretty protective of you? And then you're walking in and there are these human beings that you're scared of. And let's be honest, you would be scared of them. And they're smoking meth. So that's what would happen. Him and his mates would sit down together smoking meth whilst Martins was working and the kids were at school. So she's still going to work. She's still in a state where she's trying to pay for their life. And he's taking full advantage of the fact that she has a home and warmth and a place where he can chill and relax while she carries on doing whatever needs to be done to earn the money. And it's a free license for those guys who probably aren't welcome very many other places. So now it's like a drugs den, basically. And even if Martins at this point is feeling a little bit on the back foot and concerned that she's moved too fast with this guy, how likely and how comfortable are you going to be saying to these individuals who are around your gaff every day getting high, can you please leave? I don't want to be with you anymore. I mean, just put yourself in that position. A lot of us, because they're gang affiliated and associated, would think, geez, what will happen to me if I try to assert my power? Because we know what these kind of characters are often willing to do. At this moment in time, I imagine that she's trapped to some degree. I'm not defending her, by the way. Personally, guns are legal in the States. Maybe I would just get a group of my friends and my parents who are close to the children to just go around and, I don't know, shuffle them out, shall we say. Or I don't know, just get the police around so they're all arrested and then that's hopefully problem solved before quickly moving to a new address. Victoria's grandparents, who I mentioned earlier on, who were incredibly close to Victoria, they had no idea that the daughter was seeing Gonzalez. He'd actually told them not to tell them. I'm just gonna throw it out there now. Is it just me? It's just me. Getting a new relationship, you know, usually a bit of an exciting time, isn't it? Bit of an exciting time. You're like, oh, got these butterflies. Gonna be nice. Friday night's gonna be romantic. All those good feelings. You kind of can't stop talking. It's like verbal diarrhea, isn't it? We've all done it. Bored our friends to a point where they wonder whether they need to block us on all devices and move home because we've just bored them with how wonderful this new guy or girl is. You know, they have to go through that for a good 6 months. And like 5 years down the line, they wonder what happened to that person when you're going, I cannot bear that he leaves his clothes on the floor. You know, it's just the way of love. But if I was in a scenario where a man who I'd met was like, don't tell your parents we're together. You don't want me to tell my parents that we're together? Under no circumstances. But I thought this was a romantic situation where we were, you know, gonna move it to a new level, you can move in, and we were gonna be a couple. That's all true, but you must tell no one. I don't feel like I'm that comfortable with that. Is there a reason for that?
Is it maybe because you have a horrible background, you're gang affiliated, you're a meth head, and you're probably quite dangerous? Nothing to do with that. It's purely because I want to retain the mystery in our relationship. That's it. Just want to retain the mystery. Oh, okay. I have no patience with these kind of situations. If a man or a woman says, don't tell anyone that we're together, it means they're either married or they are bad. And even if they are married, that still kind of makes them bad. But the point is, it's for a dark purpose. Immediately withdraw, end relationship, and suggest that if they get in contact with you, they're harassing you. That would be my advice, per se. But yeah, this is what happens, and she goes along with it. It's as simple as that, which again is a ridiculous thing to do. Then we get to the 15th of August, 2016. And then we get to the 15th of August, 2016, and it's hard to imagine that things could get any worse, but they can. Oh yeah, it's gonna get worse because Gonzalez's cousin, 31-year-old Jessica Kelly, well, she's released from prison because they have great DNA running through their family, don't they? And they seem like a great big pro-social bunch of people. But like Gonzalez, she had a massive criminal record and she had been in prison for numerous things. So over the previous decades, she'd been done for offences like drug trafficking, battery. During one prison sentence, get this, she took part in the rape of another inmate. She acted as a lookout. I don't care. If anything, it definitely makes you equal to the actual perpetrator doing it. But for me, to some degree, it makes you worse. You are ensuring that that rape occurs. You are ensuring that that individual has time to carry out that action. So this is a woman who is happy to see the sexual abuse of another woman roll out in front of her and to actually collude with it and make it possible. She's also a regular meth user, so she's somebody who has drug problems and dependency issues. And don't get me wrong, Kelly had had some difficulties when she was younger. She'd lost a parent, her dad had died, and it does seem that this coincides with her spiraling into a life of drugs and crime. But that does not make you the kind of malevolent personality that calls to be a lookout whilst a woman is violated. No. Grief does not do that. And it's really infuriating to me when people make these links. Oh, it's a hard childhood. No, a hard childhood can make you make difficult decisions. A hard childhood can certainly make you start drug dealing or stealing to live. And you're doing it for that purpose alone. Doesn't make it right, but you can see the reasoning behind it because you've had a fractured education, your foundations are poor. But when you're talking about aiding and abetting some kind of sexual violation, no, that's got nothing to do with grief at all. It's got nothing to do with anything apart from your nature. Now, for some reason, probably because Gonzalez is pressuring Martins at this point, or maybe he's just lied to her about what his cousin has done, but she agrees that Kelly could move into the apartment. Now, this is meant to just be on a temporary basis. It's meant to be for a week or so. So she moves in on the 18th of August, 2016. At this point, she'd been out of prison for 4 days. Just gonna put it out there. For me, I've always thought that prison ideally is meant to have a bit of reformation involved. You know, you're meant to walk out going, oh, I'm gonna try better. I'm gonna work harder. You know, at least within the first few weeks, you should be thinking that way. I'm not going to go back to prison again. But it really doesn't seem that Kelly has changed whatsoever. Now, Martins claims that it's at the point where Kelly moves in that Gonzalez changes. Apparently, he becomes more distant. Gonna throw it out there, Martins. Chuck him out. Be like, get out my house. It's my house. Get out my house. Get out my house. Just don't be putting up when you've not even been in a relationship for a month with a guy who's moved somebody in and is now being distant from you. It's not their home. But she notices this change. I mean, I don't know whether she really does notice this change or whether it's a reflective hindsight episode that she's kind of ruminating over. I understand that. We often will look back and think, maybe there were some signs that we didn't necessarily understand were playing out at the time. But I don't doubt that Kelly would have had an impact moving into the house. And Gonzalez's behaviour deteriorates even further. Apparently Martin says that he attends his barbecue and he gets into an altercation with a pregnant woman. Not being funny, but any man who gets into an altercation with a pregnant woman doesn't have boundaries. Simple as that. You know, there are certain rules that we should always apply in the world, and a pregnant woman is vulnerable. What are you doing getting into any kind of aggravated situation with them? Martin's later stated that Gonzalez was really angry after this incident, to the point where she really felt like he was going to hit her. But the truth is, that didn't happen. Instead, it seems that it wouldn't be Martin's who would really suffer as a consequence of his actions, sadly. That was going to be somebody else, someone far less equipped to manage somebody like him. On the 23rd of August 2016, Victoria had her 10th birthday. Her mum had baked cupcakes so that she could take them into school and share them with her friends. Her maternal grandparents, John and Pat Martins, had spoken to her on that afternoon. They had no idea when they were wishing her happy birthday, when they were talking to her on the phone that afternoon, that it would be the last time they would ever speak to their granddaughter ever again. Now, Martins and Gonzalez, they were in and out of the apartment for most of the day. Martin's son was actually staying with his father that day, and for the grace of God, that was the case, because what I'm going to tell you, I cannot be sure or safe that he wouldn't have befallen the same kind of fate. So he's there with his biological father, but Victoria, well, she needs collecting from the bus stop after school. So Martins texts Kelly, this person who's just moved in, to her apartment after being released from prison for some reprehensible crimes. She's like, she'll be fine to just go and pick up my daughter. So yeah, she's just like, you know, why don't you go and collect her? You seem like a really trusted individual. I mean, there's nothing in your background that's sinister, sexually deviant, terrifying, reprehensible, and should make me run as far away from you, aside from even ever considering in this universe of trusting you with my daughter. But I don't know. She decides, yeah, Kelly's the person to go. Personally, straw poll. Just choose a random person off the street. Chances are you're going to get somebody with less of a worrying background. Seriously, go on Plenty of Fish. You'll probably be able to just select anyone there. And again, the likelihood is they won't be this whole heap of weird and wrong in their background. But that's what she does. So at the point where she texts Kelly to ask her to look after her child, well, Kelly's high on meth. Of course she is. So when she doesn't hear back from Kelly, who's obviously off her nut, high on meth, she decides that it's best to get in contact with her mother and ask her to go instead, but then she changes her mind. And the reason that she changes her mind is that she simply doesn't want her mother to see Kelly living at the apartment. Bear in mind, they don't even know about her boyfriend. So, first of all, we don't even introduce the grandparents into the reality of the relationship, let alone the fact that that relationship has now brought in this third party, a stranger with a horrendous criminal background, into a home where two young children are living. Understandably, the grandparents would have been deeply unhappy. So instead, she tells the mother there's no need to collect Victoria. Now, ultimately, that meant that Victoria had to make her own way back home. So no one picked that little girl up. I mean, that instantly is a big red flag to me. Because at the end of the day, she should have ensured that her daughter was picked up, or she should have left work. For me, that is a big red flag. At the end of the day, you should absolutely, without a doubt, want to ensure that your child gets home safely. If you think that you're worried about your parent seeing that somebody is living in the flat that shouldn't be, that should not usurp the reality of your child needing safe passage home. So again, for me, there is certainly a slide in the way that Martins is acting around her own children. Grandparents would have helped without a doubt. They are really good, loving people. Now, Victoria is ultimately found wandering around the apartment car park by another resident, and this resident texts Martins. So by the time that Martins returns, Victoria's actually managed to get into the apartment and she's actually doing her homework on the balcony. Martins was furious with Kelly, apparently, at this point for not collecting her daughter. So she is clearly very angry and she lets Kelly know that she's angry about the fact that her daughter hasn't been collected. But with respect to Martins, I think that, as I said, a random stranger or a small child, maybe a toddler, would have got her daughter home more safely than a meth head that Kelly is. Now, in spite of the fact that apparently Martins is really unhappy with Kelly's behaviour and unreliability, Martins then decides to leave her daughter alone with her again. I mean, did she go online and look for worst babysitting choices in the world and just like throw it out there and get a return of Martins? Because genuinely, no one should be leaving this woman with anybody's child. Actually, no one should be leaving this woman alone in their house. Seriously. Bad idea with a drug dependent who's got, you know, a habit. You might find out your TV's gone when you get home and they're wearing your clothes. So, like I said, another bad choice. And bear in mind, by this point, Kelly has been smoking meth for hours. Ugh. Sometimes when I'm telling these stories and I've done the research and I know where I'm going, I just want to be able to stop the world, change time and create a different outcome, because this was so preventable. Kelly actually spoke to her sister later that day and she told her sister that she was tweaking. Let me enlighten those of you who are not drug users, who don't know a lot about drug use. So tweaking is a symptom of meth use. So following a drug binge, the user can experience basically a period of anxiety and insomnia. And that means that they can't really achieve a rush or a high any longer. And when you're tweaking, that can be very, very miserable for the individual, because it takes between 3 and 15 days for the rush or high to return when you're taking the drug. So you have these really irritable, anxious, insomniac experiences. This often results in paranoia, irritability. It can result in hallucinations. It can also result in very violent behavior. And Kelly is describing to her sister that this is a state that she is in whilst looking after this delightful little girl, Victoria. Now, Martins, she would later claim that it was Gonzales who persuaded her to let Kelly look after Victoria, and that decision would prove to be the worst decision of her life, full stop. I think we can all agree that at times partners can be persuasive, of course, but when it comes down to being a parent, it's not Gonzales' fault that Martins agrees to go with him and leave her child with Martins. This is the woman who failed to pick that child up from school, who has been on the phone telling her sister that she's tweaking and who's basically totally intoxicated on meth. It's all visible. So Martins could easily have said, no, I'm not going to leave my child with this excuse for a human. I'm going to stay because it isn't safe. Nonetheless, as it plays out, that's what happens. We get to the early hours of the 24th of August 2016. At this point, Martins awakes to Kelly, and Kelly's standing over her. Now, whilst Kelly is standing over her, and of course Martins is a bit confused now, you know, she's like, who are you? Why are you? What are you doing there? And then coming to the consciousness of like, oh, it's Kelly. Probably in that same moment thinking, oh, hang on a minute, Kelly's like a quite a serious criminal who's really intoxicated. Maybe I have a problem here. Before that, probably even had a chance to run through her brain, Kelly began hitting her with an iron in her face. An iron. Martins has done nothing to provoke this at all. She's suddenly being violently assaulted with a heavy implement. Blunt force trauma, essentially. So Martins at this point runs into Victoria's room, and she later claimed that the reason for this is she wanted to lock the bedroom door and then jump out of the window so that she could have Victoria jump down into her arms. That makes sense. You know, I'm sure she did want to escape. She's thinking there's some absolute lunatic running around my house with a blunt object causing harm to me and likely will do the same to my child, going into Victoria's room, making sure that she locked the door to get her child out of bed, to get them out of the place. That makes sense to me. I'm going to come down hard on Martins in a lot of ways, but that makes sense to me. The problem is that Victoria isn't in her room. She's not there. Now, I don't know, some of you listening will maybe think, well, there was a mother's instinct that she should have thought about where Victoria could be in the house. I don't know, smash up a chair in the room, pick up a large lamp, go and fight said assailant and try to fend them off whilst looking for your child. That could be the case, that lots of people feel she should have done that. But she was saying in the moment when she decided to leave the house that she just wanted to get some help. So she ran to her neighbours and asked them to help her. And it's actually Gonzalez who jumps from the balcony and runs to the neighbours for help. That's an important point to remember for later on, the fact that he jumps and runs for help. Because one other thing about alerting help, particularly when you think about the police being called to the place that you're living at, is that they're going to investigate what's going on inside. That's important. So if you've done something wrong, are you going to want to introduce the authorities there? Like I said, this is just a bit of information that we can all think about for later down the line. Martins also manages to escape outside, but of course Victoria still inside. So this is deeply disturbing. Again, for me, Victoria would not be inside, neither would most of my doors, because I would have knocked them off the hinges so that I could have made sure that my child was removed. Literally, the wrath of a mother is not something that many can manage. But again, at this moment in time, as far as they're concerned, Victoria is still inside. 4:30 a.m., really early hours of the morning, the police are called to the domestic disturbance at the Martins apartment. And a resident reported the incident because they could see that there were these altercations occurring, and Martins and Gonzalez were actually heard in the background during the call. When the officers arrived, Martins and Gonzalez were actually outside the building. Both of them had been physically injured. Martins had this 3-inch gash running from her forehead and down the left side of her nose. It was a really serious injury. And Gonzalez had a black eye and a gash above his left eye. So you can imagine that certainly for Martins, this is completely out of the ordinary in her experience and life. And she's been severely injured. There's no sign at this point of Kelly, there's no sign of Victoria. But Martins claims that her daughter's still in the apartment. So when the officers shout for Kelly to come out, because obviously they want to make sure that she isn't armed and dangerous, and they want to hopefully remove any escalation of violence, they want to reduce and de-escalate. So they ask Kelly to come out and she just tries to run. Simple as that. She wants to get away from the scene. So she locks the door of the apartment and then she actually jumps off the second floor balcony. Gonna throw it out there. Just gonna throw it out there. Second floor balconies are quite high. Anyone else come across one of those kind of things? Oh, I just jump down, it'll be absolutely fine. And then your bones sticking out of your knee and your ankle. Just saying, not a good idea, particularly when you're tweaking because you're not thinking straight. So she ends up fracturing her ankle in the process and she's quickly apprehended. So now the officers are going into the apartment and there's something wrong straight away. They can smell it. The smoke coming from under the closed bathroom door. This isn't what they expect. This is a domestic disturbance. Yes, there has been somebody who's been very violent to the adults in the household. They've now apprehended that person. As far as they are concerned, they're going to go and check on the welfare of that child. They're not expecting what they're going to find. They couldn't have imagined it for one moment. They enter the bathroom with this smoke that's coming from underneath the door. And the scene is just horrific. They find the angelic 10-year-old Victoria dead. Well, she wasn't just dead. I mean, that's beyond tragic anyway. But somebody had dismembered her body. Her arms had been cut off. Her torso had been sliced from the collarbone to the navel. That meant that they saw her internal organs, some of which had actually been moved. And the remains had then been wrapped in plastic bags. And then a blanket had been put in the bath, which had covered them. And then they had set the blanket on fire. Obviously, the officers who find that scene, they extinguish the flames and they have to try to check to see whether there is any possibility of signs of life. I mean, they know there isn't. They know that there's no hope for this little girl, but they have to go through that process. They have to make sure that when the relatives ask about what played out, that they can in good conscience say we did our best. And again, imagine how that would be for those officers, for those individuals just coming into what they believe is just going to be an ordinary. Yes, it's not nice dealing with an ordinary domestic, but you know, this is something that they deal with day in and day out. But suddenly they're looking at a torso, a dismembered child, a little girl. Officers later discovered and recovered a bag that contained Victoria's dismembered arms, heart. They found part of her sternum. They found a portion of her liver, and that had all been dumped in the laundry hamper. One detective described the killing as the most gruesome act of evil they had ever seen. And when they looked at Victoria's body, they said it was so mutilated that they really didn't know how she died initially. And they were worried that they wouldn't be able to tell that, because everything that would have given them insight to the way a crime had played out had been affected by this mutilation. On discovering this horrific scene, Martins, Gonzalez and Kelly are immediately arrested. They're arrested on suspicion of multiple offences, including murder, child abuse, causing death, and of course tampering with evidence. So all three of them at that moment in time are being arrested for those particular charges. Martins was interviewed by the police 3 times, and there is something really worrying about what happens during those interviews, because her story changed repeatedly. So let's go with the initial statement. So first of all, she just denies any involvement. She claims that Kelly had attacked her and Gonzalez in the middle of the night. She said that I had no idea what happened to my daughter at all. So she kind of lets them know that this is all news to her. The first indication that something was truly wrong was when she was hit in the face with an iron. But then she changed her statement, saying that she and Gonzalez had left Victoria alone with Kelly and claimed that basically Victoria had died after taking some meth that she'd found. Doesn't make really sense, does it? I mean, kids aren't going to be wandering around at that age, 10 years of age, going, oh, I'm just going to give myself some meth. Particularly when you've seen the mess it's making of the adults around you. But this is what they're saying. Like, basically, Martins is suggesting that she's found this meth, she's ingested this meth, and then she's died because she's OD'd. Martins said at this point, Gonzalez and Kelly had disposed of Victoria's body and threatened to kill her if she actually went to the authorities. Now, the detectives did not believe this version of events either. So they are not buying in to either of the stories that she has told them so far. So after 8 hours of police interviews, Martins finally confessed, shall we put that in just inverted commas, confessed to what had happened. But this is only after detectives have lied to her. They've lied to her. They say that Gonzalez had already told them the truth. So she believes that they know something that she should be telling them that they've had confirmed by Gonzalez. And this always kind of surprises me, because if a police officer was like, hey, your husband said you did it, he's already told us word for word how you are fully responsible, I'd be like, well, I've told you I'm not, so how come his consider the truth? Because like at the end of the day, it's his word against my word and my word is what I'm sticking to. But this is something that they use quite successfully a lot in interrogations. So now she thinks that apparently Gonzalez has spilled the beans. So Martins now states that she had been complicit in her daughter's abuse for some time. She said she got sexual pleasure from watching men have sex with her child. She said that she looked for men online and arranged for her daughter to be abused. And she said that Gonzalez was the latest of these men. She goes on to claim that the plan had been for Gonzalez and Kelly to have sex with Victoria. And Martin said that she'd actually watched the pair rape Victoria on at least 3 previous occasions. She also said that she suspected Gonzalez had been abusing her daughter for a month whilst she was at work. Said he had also filmed and photographed the abuse. And on this occasion, to calm Victoria down before the assault, she'd been given alcohol and orally given meth. Gonzalez had then proceeded to rape the child whilst Kelly covered her mouth. Gonzalez apparently then strangled Victoria to death whilst Kelly stabbed her in the abdomen. Martins at this point claims that she was watching whilst Victoria begged for mercy, and after she was dead, Kelly held her arms out whilst Gonzalez cut them off with a knife. Apparently the three had then just got on with their day, like nothing had happened, as you do, just what people do, totally normal, just get on with your day. Martins even claimed that she actually had sex with Gonzalez 20 minutes later. Now, before we go any further, I'm just gonna throw it out there that if I was an interrogator and I had this mother telling me this stuff, literally telling me the most depraved actions and evidencing that they had been complicit, they'd enjoyed it, they'd encouraged it. Hell, they just got on with their day after doing it. In fact, they had sex with their partner after seeing it because it was such a titillating experience watching her kid chopped up. If I'm an investigator, that's gonna be the story of the year, right? And it's really going to fit with the bias that I have about child killers anyway, right? Because I want to see myself as so distinct, so different from those human beings. I don't want to be in the same ballpark. I want evil to basically be emanating from every pore of their body. And if I hear that story, man, I'm going to buy into it. And believe me, when I was watching this play out in the press, I read that stuff and my blood boiled and I thought, my God, just give me an hour. Just give me an hour in a room with that mother, because it incites the rage within pro-social human beings that is hard to bear. And now on this third interview, this is what Martins is telling them. Now, in contrast to Martins' confession, Gonzalez maintained he'd actually neither raped nor murdered Victoria. So he initially gave the exact same account as Martins had. He said that Kelly had attacked them both in the night, but later he did claim that he'd returned to the apartment and discovered Kelly with Victoria's body, and then he had, in fact, helped to dispose of the corpse. So, as I've said, the first account that's given by Gonzalez and Martins is that they were not present when Victoria died. And even when Gonzalez admits to the fact that he did help Kelly dispose of Victoria's body, he's not involving Martins in that scene. Now, when the news of Victoria's murder went public, there was outrage. I was one of those who was outraged. A lot of you will have followed this case and felt exactly the same, and people were utterly shocked. The brutality of the killing was unspeakable. And we're talking about a murder of a child here, this happening to a child. On the 29th of October 2016, there was a memorial service that was held for Victoria, and more than 600 people attended. Many of them wore purple because that was Victoria's favourite colour. People care, don't they? It's not their child. It's not their daughter. It's not their peer. It's none of those things, but it's far-reaching because everyone knows that this child has been denied a future that could have seen her do and be anything. And that's never going to play out because it was stolen from her. And people want to show their allegiance with the legacy they feel that child deserves. And so them all turning up in purple is a beautiful thing. Now, of course, it seems as far as investigators are concerned, that the detectives have quickly solved this child's brutal murder. But it turns out that isn't the case at all. So yeah, they got the headlines. You've seen the pictures. We've made our decisions about the kind of human beings that these individuals are. Some of them are right, but some of them are wrong. Because as the investigation progressed, well, it was discovered that the evidence just didn't fit the details of Martin's confession. And I just want to draw your attention to earlier on as well. Bear in mind, she's talked about willingly being involved in the rape of her child, enjoying it. Yet when she saw a man kiss her child inappropriately, as she did with a previous partner, she called child services. It's a massive change in the way that she's acting if she's now engaged in this kind of situation. So, as noted, this is an unusual change of events. When they look at Victoria's autopsy as well, they realise that she'd actually died through manual strangulation. There were abrasions and scratches on her neck. They also found that the dismemberment had occurred after death. So it doesn't fit in with what Martins is saying about how she was killed. The pathologist concluded the sharp force injuries described showed no vital response, a finding in keeping with being inflicted post-mortem. So what Martin says about her daughter being stabbed while she's alive just isn't playing out in what they find in the autopsy post-mortem. The autopsy also found that in addition to the arms being removed, there'd also been an attempt to remove a leg, the left leg in fact. But crucially, they had done toxicology tests and there was no trace of drugs or alcohol in her system. That was aside from ethanol, and that's something that naturally occurs following death. And furthermore, whilst Victoria had definitely been sexually assaulted at some point, that had happened, there was no evidence that that had occurred on the day she died. Tragically as well, when they did the investigation around her body, they were able to establish that she had actually contracted an STD. She was 10. She was 9, in fact, when she contracted HPV. And they believe that that was from a sexual assault that she endured several months earlier, which her mother had failed to report to the authorities. That, again, is a big red flag because she has previously been in contact with the authorities over concerns that her child has been abused, but this sexual assault wasn't reported. We could also introduce, of course, the possibility that she didn't see the point because no one had taken any of the prior calls very seriously. I don't know. We should always balance out possibilities. They were able to establish that Victoria had died at some point between 7 p.m. and 8:45 p.m. And when they analysed the mobile data of Martins and Gonzalez, it was clear that neither of them had actually been present when she died. And crucially, probably most crucially, DNA was found on Victoria's back, which belonged to an unidentified male. That's clearly something that should have been really obvious from the get-go. You know, I'm not saying that you don't look at all parties. I'm saying if there is an unidentified male's DNA on her back, on her body, this is something that should have been highlighted because we're talking about another individual or perpetrator that's possibly walking around. Unfortunately, because Victoria's body had been washed after death, it turns out that there was insufficient DNA to create a full profile. But that means that now the authorities realise, hey, it's likely there was another unidentified male present, if not responsible for her death. And finally, the authorities would find no evidence at all that Martins had ever trafficked a daughter for sex, even though she confessed that that had occurred. Now, Martin's confession was false. It's as simple as that. It had been something that she felt she needed to say at that time. In fact, when they did a psychological evaluation on her, they established that she was a people pleaser, that she was somebody who was ready to agree to any statement that the police put to her. And when you look at the interrogation videos, they were able to highlight that Martins had lots of inconsistencies and contradictions. It wasn't a case of her relaying facts, shall we say, as she believed them to be. Instead, I'll be honest, it was just a case of the detectives making statements and Martins pretty much agreeing with every single thing that they said. So they're feeding her lines. She's nodding, she's agreeing, she's saying, yeah, that happened. And they're praising her for nodding and agreeing and saying that. And she's liking that because now maybe she's not as unpopular with them as she believed that she was when this whole thing started to play out. The fact that she is literally placing herself in a position where she's gonna be going down for the rest of her life is not occurring to her in that moment. And they shouldn't have been questioning her in a way that led to her just repeating back essentially what they wanted her to say. That in itself is problematic. They're also able to establish that Martins was a really vulnerable individual, that she had a below average IQ, and these are all things that meant that she was more fragile to these kind of scenarios unfolding. Also, let's be honest, this is why Gonzalez and Kelly were just so easy able to manipulate her. I mean, think about it. He got together with her in a week, he moved into her apartment. Within a few weeks, he moved his cousin into the apartment. This is all down to her wanting to please people. She wanted the detectives to like her in that moment. So she told them what they wanted to hear. So she claimed to have witnessed her daughter's murder when she wasn't even in the apartment. Of course, all the while, she wasn't realizing that she was fully incriminating herself. Also, detectives have actually revealed details of the crime during the interrogation. She told her details of what happened, and then she started to like weave it in to her confession to try to make it seem more credible. And this is all going out in the press, essentially. Can you imagine the level of hate for this woman? People believing that she had been complicit in the heinous murder of her child. It wouldn't be until 2 years after Victoria's death that the true version of events would actually be established by the authorities. It's also why I've waited this long to tell this story, because boy, I've wanted to tell this story, but I couldn't until I knew how it had played out in court. I needed to be more balanced, because if I'd done this, you know, at a point where I was hearing what I was hearing in the press, and did it as an unsolved one that I'd returned to, my narrative would have been totally off. It would have been based on what she was saying. Now, at the end of the day, it turns out that during the process of really investigating what had happened, they did figure out the true version of events, as far as the authorities are concerned, at least. I always say that because as we go a little bit further into this, there'll always be a little bit of doubt in my mind because of deals that occur. Just bear that in mind. So according to Kelly, she had smoked methamphetamine for hours. She was becoming really paranoid that day. And she was at a point where she felt that God was sending her messages through the television. She also apparently believed that her ex had hacked her phone line. Now, by around 5 p.m., Martins and Gonzalez had come back to the apartment. They were with Kelly and Victoria. And earlier on, they'd been out sourcing drugs. However, by 6:30 p.m., Martins and Gonzalez had left again to go to Paradise Hills. They returned half an hour later. And then just after 7 p.m, Martins and Gonzalez then left the apartment again. And again, she left Victoria in Kelly's care. Now, this coincides with what residents also testified about. They said that they saw Victoria around that time as she was still alive. Between the time that Martins and Gonzalez left the apartment, and the time that they returned, the investigators believed that an unknown man arrived in the apartment. They believe that apparently it was revenge following Gonzalez's fight at the barbecue, or it was revenge because of a gang or drug-related issue. Apparently this person asked for Favo, which is Gonzalez's gang name. And according to Kelly, the man was well-dressed. He had a Mexican accent. He said that Gonzalez had messed up and knows what he did. So obviously Kelly's like, well, he's not here. So when this guy is told that Gonzalez isn't home, he just walks into the apartment. And then he walks into Victoria's bedroom and he strangles her to death. After he's done this, he basically tells Kelly, who I don't know, has just let this play out in front of her. That does not make sense to me. I don't care who this human being is. If he's walked in to my apartment that I'm staying at and he's killing a child, he's gonna have to hope that I haven't got a blunt object or a sharp object in my hand, because it's gonna be in him. And we already know Kelly is very good at using at least blunt objects. So I don't know what she's doing at this moment in time when this child is being murdered. But he then commands her to clean up the mess, and arguably she sees that as a direct order, as opposed to maybe I should call the emergency services and say that a homicide has just taken place basically whilst I've been present. See, this doesn't make sense to me, but this is what the investigators are saying. So apparently Martins and Gonzalez were also in the South Valley until approximately 8 p.m. They arrived back at the apartment just after 8:45 p.m. But they don't get out of the car straight away. They sit and listen to music. I don't know, like 13-year-olds do. Anyway, Kelly emerges from the apartment. She's carrying something wrapped in a blanket. Apparently this was Victoria's lifeless body. Upon seeing Martins and Gonzalez, who are parked up, Kelly then thinks that, what am I going to do? I can't let them see. So she returns to the apartment with Victoria's body. Then Martins and Gonzalez go in to the apartment. Apparently Martins was unaware that her daughter was dead at this point. She had no idea. Kelly then takes Gonzalez to one side and tells him what's happened. And as opposed to either of them showing a thread of common sense or morality, apparently they decide, you know what, we'll just dispose of the child's body. Can you imagine how that would go? I was in this apartment, this guy comes, Mexican, dressed quite well, basically wants to know where you are, just comes in, kills the kid, tells me to just sort the mess out, and I don't know what to do. What should we do? We should dispose of the body. I mean, that's what any completely sensible person would be doing. I mean, have you not ever thought logically in your life? No one will suspect us of being involved in this horrific scenario if we just totally dispose of this innocent child's body. Let's do that, said no one with a brain cell ever. Genuinely, this bit really concerns me. The fact that the conversation they end up having is not about how the hell has this happened, what on earth can we now do to ensure that the killer of this gorgeous little girl is brought to justice. But no, apparently they wanted to keep what had played out from Martins, who apparently goes to sleep quite quickly after they arrive back, so they aren't informing her that this has taken place. So they aren't at any point thinking, I don't know, let's speak to the emergency services. It's bizarre, the idea that they thought that they could keep Martins from being aware of what had happened, and that they see that the actions that they're taking now are making more sense than alerting the authorities. It goes straight over my head. It really does. I mean, even if we were to imagine that Gonzalez has some kind of fear of gang retribution and retaliation, still, it does not make sense whatsoever what they decide to do. So they keep Martins out of the loop, and Gonzalez and Kelly begin the grisly task of trying to conceal the murder. So they place bin bags on the floor and they dismember Victoria's body together. They remove her arms using the kitchen knife. Also, they remove the internal organs, at least some of them, which they put in a laundry bag hamper. They dumped Victoria's remains in the bath, wrapped in plastic bags and a blanket. Now, they did the best at that point to clean up the crime scene, but understandably, there is literally a child who's been dismembered in the bath, so they hadn't cleaned it up very effectively. But then we get to the early hours of the following morning. This is when Kelly attacks Martins and Gonzalez with an iron. Now, Martins ultimately made it to the front door. This is where Kelly grabbed her hair and hit her with a picture frame. Martins then trapped Kelly's hand in the door as she attempts to shut it. And it's at this point, apparently, Kelly said, "And by the way, your daughter is dead." So this is the moment when she becomes aware that Victoria has been killed. Gonzalez, well, he's called the police from another apartment. And then both he and Martins wait outside for the authorities. Kelly remained inside the apartment. But shortly before the police arrived, she'd already removed the smoke alarms by this point. She then set fire to Victoria's remains in the bath. Like, this is what the investigators are telling what's happened. Now, in light of this new evidence, the murder charges were dropped against all three of the suspects, as were the rape charges that were against Gonzalez and Kelly. The authorities now were convinced that this unknown male had killed Victoria, and that meant that Martins, Gonzalez and Kelly subsequently faced less serious charges. Now, in 2018, Martins agrees a plea deal. So she knows that there are going to be consequences for the fact that her child has died whilst on her watch, without a doubt. So she pleads guilty to reckless child abuse resulting in death. Now, although she hadn't been present at Victoria's actual murder, let's be honest, she did have ample warning that she was in danger and she did nothing. And as far as they were concerned, they felt that she then effectively contributed to her daughter's death. So she faced 12 to 15 years in prison. The court decided to wait until Gonzalez's trial was over before sentencing her. And I just want it to be noted at this point that it is unbelievable to me how Martins went from a loving, responsible mother to someone who would just leave a child with a drug-addled criminal. She was clearly very easily led. She was very suggestible, which is definitely evidenced by her false confessions. Now, Laura Bobbs, who was Victoria's godmother, she later stated, "Michelle didn't change until these people inducted themselves into her life. What kind of power they had over her, I don't know." In 2019, this is despite being the only suspect in custody who was with Victoria when she died, Kelly, that's right, Kelly, tweaking, drug-addled, hit you in the face with an iron, Kelly, she got offered a plea deal, which she accepted. Of course she accepted it. This is why, guys, I've been a little bit on the fence regarding what investigators are telling us played out, because if I'm going to trust somebody, I'm not going to trust somebody who basically was at the place where the child died over a person who wasn't present. Seriously, what they're telling me is less likely to be true what the person who wasn't there is telling me. I'm just throwing it out there, that's my feeling. But she's offered this plea deal. Now, the authorities had basically agreed to drop the murder charge as long as she testified against Gonzalez. Yeah. As long as she testified against the guy who wasn't present when Victoria died. Also, they wanted
her to tell them about the details of this unknown fourth perpetrator. So what she ended up doing was she pleaded no contest to 6 felony charges, including reckless child abuse, resulting in death. So what they were saying there is that she'd basically known the threat the unknown male posed to Victoria, but had still allowed him to enter. She was also done for tampering with evidence because she tried to conceal the murder, aggravated assaults because of the attacks on Martins and Gonzalez with the iron. And almost 6 years after the killing, Kelly was sentenced to 44 years in prison. But you know what, guys? She'll be eligible for her parole after serving just half her sentence. That makes you feel safe, particularly knowing that she aided and abetted a rape of a woman. She sounds like just the kind of character that we want to have walking our streets. Gonzalez, well, he gets charged with reckless abuse of a child resulting in death. And he also gets charged with multiple counts of tampering with evidence. He pleaded not guilty to all counts. He just said, it's not me, I didn't do it. He refused a plea deal. He said, I'm innocent. And incredibly, and it is incredible when you think about the fact that no matter what, this little girl was murdered and was murdered on the adults' watch who were around her. But he actually got released in November 2019 whilst awaiting his trial. Now, Gonzalez's trial commenced July this year. And bear in mind, when he was released, there were some big protests. There were a lot of women on the streets, and men on the streets, but mostly women, saying how reprehensible they felt it was that this man who they considered to be a child killer or a contributor to a child killer was free. So this trial commenced in July, and in accordance with the plea deal, Kelly testified as a witness for the prosecution. And I think we can all agree, can't we? I bet every single one of you is sitting at home going, if I were to create the perfect witness, you know, the person that once they've sworn on the Bible, I can sit back knowing, hand on heart, that they're honest. We'd all go for someone like Kelly, wouldn't we? I mean, what's not to like about this woman? She goes ahead and sticks with this story that this unknown man had killed Victoria and that Gonzalez had then helped her to conceal the crime. Now, Martins also testified. However, you won't be surprised to know that a little bit like her previous confessions, she just constantly contradicted herself. Did you go into the room? I did go into the room. Did you not go into the room? I didn't. I didn't go into the room. Do you have a cat? I have a cat. Is it a dog that's a Bichon Frise? It's a Bichon Frise called Jeremy. That kind of thing. At one point, she even stated that she was vigilant about her daughter's welfare after experience with a previous boyfriend. Yet she also admitted to letting a drug addled addict move into a home with a daughter after just 1 week. Few holes to be picked in that kind of testimony. The prosecution alleged that Gonzalez's actions were the catalyst for Victoria's death. So days before she had been murdered, he got into a fight with a pregnant woman at a barbecue and he ended up with a black eye. And that can actually be clearly seen on a later mugshot. Now, prosecutors claimed it's at this point that Gonzalez had actually made threats and he brought his gang members into the argument. And this had caused a ruckus and really got people on the wrong side towards him. So they allege that as payback for his actions, the unknown man basically went to Martin's apartment and killed her daughter. And then, as Kelly suggested, told her to clean up the crime scene. So they argue that whilst Gonzalez didn't actually kill Victoria, there was a chain of causation. He set in motion a series of events that created this really dangerous environment that ultimately led to her death. I actually don't want to sound like I'm coming down on Gonzalez's side right now. I'm not. I'm not saying this guy was a good guy. I'm not saying that he should have been around the kids. You know, I don't feel that way. I'm just saying, I got into a few rows with a few people. you know, in the past. And I have been in situations where people have threatened me during an argument saying that so-and-so will sort this out because they think that by introducing their hard cousin, it may make me go on the back foot. Particularly when I was younger, these kind of things were normal. I don't think that me getting in an altercation with somebody and then that person potentially being aggrieved to the point where somebody comes and kills my kid is actually my fault, right? There's a difference and a stretch in that suggestion, personally, as far as I can see it, because it's basically leveraging an excuse for somebody to come and kill. Well, if you hadn't done that, they wouldn't have done this. And we're not living in an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth time. But this is how the prosecution argue it. The defense, well, they argue that Kelly was alone responsible for Victoria's death. They said she strangled the little girl while she was alone in the apartment, while she was high on meth. And then she attempted to conceal the crime and to dispose of the body herself. I'm going to be honest with you guys. That makes more sense when you look at the timeline and the prior behaviour of this woman. But this is essentially not necessarily accepted by authorities or indeed the court. So on the 1st of August 2022, this is after a 3-week trial, it involved 500 exhibits. There was a jury of 10 women and 2 men. And they deliberated for just 3 hours before finding Gonzalez guilty on all counts. He actually showed no emotion whatsoever when the verdict was read out. And he'll be sentenced in October. He faces between 18 and 40 years in prison. A lot of people will think that that's appropriate. Some of you may feel that maybe Kelly is a complete snake who got a deal that she should never have got. I always find it intriguing when somebody goes not guilty, even when they know a plea deal from another party has been made, because arguably it's not going to go in their direction. It really won't. You know, the state have set up somebody to say that you are responsible. But if you have a belief that you are innocent of what played out, then you're not going to go guilty. You're just not. So it does interest me that he chose not to. Again, this is not excusing any of these people's behaviour. This child should be alive and walking around, and it's reprehensible that isn't the case. But Kelly is not somebody who I would have trusted at all. Like, on a list of who to trust, Kelly didn't make the list. And the list included 99.9% of the global population. Didn't even make it. Didn't make the list. Now, the big question is, what on earth has gone on? Because Victoria's killer, as far as the authorities are saying, is still on the loose. So they're searching for this person. But you know what? I don't think they're going to find them. You know why? In my opinion, in my humble opinion, the reason I don't feel that they're going to find Victoria's killer is because she is already behind bars. You know, she avoided the murder charge by agreeing a plea deal. Kelly was with Victoria when she was killed. She was tweaking from meth abuse. She was paranoid, behaving erratically. Later that very same night, she attacked Martins and Gonzalez as they slept. It's evidence of violent behavior in her present and her past. Kelly claimed that this unknown man entered the apartment and killed Victoria whilst Martins and Gonzalez were out. Now, this could be true. I mean, hey, there's certainly a trace of an unknown male DNA found on Victoria's body. However, whatever happened, I find it very hard to believe that Kelly was merely an observer. So regardless, her plea deal basically meant that she threw Gonzalez under the bus. And that means that he will no doubt receive an equally long custodial sentence, despite the fact that he was not present when Victoria was killed. Gonzalez's attorney suggested that the jury reach the verdict based on high emotions surrounding the case rather than the evidence itself. And it does seem strange that Gonzalez would
be willing to conceal a murder that he had nothing to do with? He has been to prison. He knows what the consequences would be for aiding and abetting somebody who's killed a child. He is aware of the way the system plays. But arguably, this is what was sold to the jury. Look, the only victim in this is Victoria, and this is overall a really puzzling case. It's a really tragic one. Victoria was a happy, healthy, loved child. She had a whole life ahead of her, and her mother's choices, without doubt, brought people into Victoria's world that would destroy her innocence and would ultimately destroy her life. And that is something that is beyond devastating, beyond appalling, inhuman, without a doubt. But I feel disconcerted. I feel uneasy about the verdicts in this case. I really do. I feel that Martins was easily led. She was a victim to some degree, and she certainly wasn't an A-game mother. And she's serving a sentence that some people may actually think arguably is even sterner than it should be based on her prior history. Nonetheless, she introduced people into her world that if she had not introduced them into that world would mean her child was still alive. Would mean that the grandparents who adored that child would still have her in their world and weren't dealing with the chasm of grief that the loss has left. But I feel uneasy. I feel it's wrong that Kelly was allowed that plea deal. Because I think that she would have said anything to make sure that her custodial sentence was less than what she actually received. Because if she had been done for first degree murder, we would have been looking at a whole different tariff. She knew that. At the end of the day, she was present. She was certainly full of the potential to do harm. She had prior violence. And as I said, even on the night of Victoria's death, she was violently attacking Martins and Gonzalez. And what makes me suspect more than anything that this ending isn't how it should be is that why would Gonzalez, as I said at the beginning, remember this bit, why would Gonzalez run to a neighbor's, call the authorities, get the police to come and resolve the situation, meaning that they would enter the apartment if he knew that there was a child that he had dismembered in the bath? Personally, it was only going to go one way in that moment. They were going to discover her body. Why would he introduce that possibility? That's why I feel uneasy. Arguably, equally, you could all feel that this is absolutely exactly how it should have played out and they got what they deserved. Whatever, please let me know. Give me an idea of your thoughts and feelings about this case. Were you, like me, completely convinced that we were dealing with the most evil mother in the world only to realise that we have been fed misinformation? Not like that happens very often. Or do you still feel that this individual got what she deserved because she introduced these individuals into the world? Are you like me, uneasy about the result? Do you think that Gonzalez has been hung out to dry by a very dishonest, disingenuous, and potentially murderous woman? I would love to know your thoughts.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.